to Random Gaming Talk, it's Entertainment Talk's podcast for video games. I'm your host Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is Robert. How's it going?
It's going good. How's it going for you?
Going good, going all right. This is take number two. Not that anything went wrong with the first one. I recorded the test audio and I couldn't actually remember if I listened to it or not, but we are all good to go. Yeah, we were here last week, weren't we? Yes, this last week has been very hectic and very quick and very whatever. So, we're back this week anyway. So, what have you been playing?
Oh, one of the demos that I played on Demo Fest went into in early access, Into the Dead, Our Darkest Hour, which is like a dash of Fallout Shelter and a dash of zombie survival. So basically what it is you start the game and you get the little intro and then you get the choice of two players and they're paired. So you can't choose one or the other. And it's always a mixed bag with the pair because they all have two perks and a negatives. And the negatives always seem to conflict with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like one negative is somebody's a bad chef, so they don't make as much food or it takes more materials to make the same food as the standard recipe, which wouldn't be bad, except he's paired with a person that gets hungry more often.
Right.
Or you got somebody that is a moonshiner that is, makes more booze because that's one of the consumables you can do to raise your morale, because there is morale in the game. And obviously, alcohol is, scientifically speaking, a solution. But then they get paired with somebody that's a recovering alcoholic and won't drink. Now, once you get into the game, you can rescue random survivors, and it's kind of a mixed bag of, it's nobody that's in the initial choice. And they all follow the same of, two perks and a negative. And it's just a matter of balancing them out. And then you go send them off to tasks. So you can send people to a location that you have on the map to scavenge. And then you have to have locations on the map that'll say more locations discoverable. That's how you find more locations. Or you assign them a task within your base, like produce something, shore up defenses, things like that. And it's all a one and done. You assign person to task X, and that's all they do for the turn. And it's only a two-turn day. It's a daytime and a nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pair that I've been sticking with is, I forget the characters' names, but the one person's negative is that they do less physical damage. And the other person's negative is that they get negative morale statuses easier. But those two don't really come into conflict. So once you build a communal area to refill your cheer bar, for lack of a better word, then that becomes irrelevant. You just stay there. And then the other person, you just don't send them out on missions to fight zombies. Once you find a person, an extra person or two, just leave them at home to do all the other tasks, and it sorts itself out. So that's kind of the easy starting pack to get used to the game.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Cool. Sounds like, you've got to figure out the right combination of things and try and do the best you can, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
What did you say the game was called again?
It's a long name. They need to come up with a better name. It's called Into the Dead, Our Darkest Hour.
Yeah, that is a bit long. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds very interesting. Anything else you played?
Still grinding through on XCOM. I'm about done with that. Once I'm done with that, then I'll go back to Kingdom Come Deliverance. I don't know why I had this weird itch to play the XCOM game. I just did, and I already had it in my Steam library, so I just re-downloaded it, burned through it, and, Bob's your uncle.
Nice. Cool. For me, I've still been playing Uncharted 2, because, of course, I'm replaying the Uncharted games. So I will go 1, 2, 3, I think it's four, then Lost Legacy. I couldn't remember if it was Lost Legacy, then four, or the other way around. Very, very good game still. I've been able to kind of, as I've been going through these Naughty Dog games, I went from Crash Bandicoot, Jak and Daxter, Uncharted. I've already done The Last of Us a bunch of times anyway, and I played those again before I started all these games, or played them again. I've noticed a very interesting through line in like Naughty Dog's development, like the actual. And I don't know if the through line I've noticed on like you go from this to this to this, and I'm literally talking about like these little micro changes from each game, and then the change from like how they maybe have gone from, let's say, one series to the next. I don't know if what I've noticed is the correct thing or the thing that Naughty Dog were actually thinking. And bearing in mind when you go back to the 90s with Naughty Dog until now, it's a different company. Different people probably work there because that was what, 20 over 20 odd years ago. But I've noticed an interesting kind of through line for that, which I'll be talking about more on the podcast project that I'm doing. It's interesting when people compare, and I think this is more fair in terms of Naughty Dog's library, when people compare Last of Us and Uncharted, because when you look at their four series, right, Crash and Jak and Daxter have more in common. They're the sort of fun, more platformer games. And then Uncharted comes out, is the more sort of action, blockbuster, set piece heavy game, or games rather. And then you go like slightly darker tone. Still third person, not so much action, more of an emphasis on, stealth because of horror and things like that. And then you kind of go more mature with it. It's interesting the sort of the amount of morality that's in Last of Us, not just through its story and the characters and stuff, but this idea of like, even if you don't know them, even if they're like a stranger that you come across fighting for supplies, the idea of like you're taking people's lives. And I've always heard this narrative over the years about Nathan Drake, which I found interesting, which is like he is gunning down loads and loads of people, and he has a reason for doing it. But, and I can't remember how much this evolves from, 1, 2, 3, 4, and Lost Legacy, but he's got no kind of. It's almost more like a comedy spin on it. Like, where, particularly, let's say, with Last of Us 2, when Ellie's like, someone's like gurgling on their, throat wound or whatever, because Ellie's cutting their throat and it's all like up close and all visceral and things like that. And like, you climb on a ledge as Nathan Drake because you just climbed up this, like, God knows how big of a building. He pulls someone off the ledge and he's like, woo, there we go. It's almost like a comedy spin on that. And I find that very interesting between the two of them. Or in like Last of Us 1, let's say, where you're playing more as Joel. And because he's, big and brawly and all this kind of stuff, and his whole gameplay idea is like grab people from behind and strangle them with his bare arms, and there's like a toughness and a sort of grip there. Whereas with Nathan Drake, because you can take down people, it's like he pulls them down for a second, maybe like you get this little click when he snaps someone's neck, their body flops a little bit because of the old sort of physics engine, and then he just walks away. Walks away, and or there will be certain times where, like, let's say I throw a grenade in a good spot and I hit three people at once, he'll be like, "Woo, let's go," kind of thing. So it's interesting, and again, I can kind of see how, because what was it? They did three Uncharted games, then Last of Us 1, then four and Lost Legacy, then Last of Us 2. I think that was the timeline on it. So it'd be interesting to see. Once I finish with Uncharted 4 and then go, sorry, with Uncharted 3 and then go to the first post Last of Us Uncharted game, because there's even bits in like Uncharted 4 where you can see it's been influenced by Last of Us, and then bits in Uncharted 4 where it's been sorry, bits from like Uncharted 4 that go maybe into Last of Us 2, and they kind of feed back into each other, which I guess is how development like that would work. You'd maybe like borrow certain ideas from similar games, but yeah, it's not like, okay, these people that he's killing, they're not innocent, right? And you've got a totally different scenario where like he's shooting a mixture of like pirates, so it's more pirates in the first game, Uncharted I'm talking about, And he does quite mindlessly shoot people. There's not really any sort of yeah, like when you get to some of Last of Us's cutscenes and it's like, oh my God, we really brutally murdered like all those people, and like the characters take a moment to think. And Nathan and Elena and or Chloe or whoever you're with in the scene is like, cool, where's the next tower we gotta climb? Or like figuring out, because of course they're dealing with treasure and things like that. And it's like, hey, which bit of this fits into which bit of this? You know, the Indiana Jones style kind of puzzle solving bits. I will say, because I'm at chapter 22 or 23, and I think there's 26, so I should definitely be finished with Uncharted 2 by the next podcast. I do think that there's a term called shooting gallery. I'm sure most of you are familiar with what it kind of means. And I've most heard that phrase associated with, let's say, Doom, for example. But there is, particularly again towards the end of Uncharted 2, there is a lot of shooting. You are just like quite mindlessly again, because Drake doesn't really have any sort of revelation on, oh my God, I just shot like 300 people. He's just like, cool, where's the next bit? So yeah, that's been been kind of interesting to sort of start seeing these through lines and things like that. So
I actually have an audio clip for that.
okay, go on.
Someone ever tries to kill you.
Can you play that again? I didn't quite hear it. I sort of heard like the first half of it and then it went off.
Oh, so if somebody ever tries to kill you, you try to kill them right back.
Yeah.
Kind of describes the games.
Yeah. See, again, it's because with Uncharted did come first. It's like, okay, here's some pirates who are trying to get the thing that I'm trying to get, which is Sir Francis Drake's treasure. That's the first game. And then the second game is more like, hey, here's this more armored guy who is a bit mad, a bit crazy, who's after the same thing I'm after. And it essentially kind of boils down to whether it's pirates or an armed person or whoever's in the later games. It's like, okay, I want to get this treasure because I'm a treasure hunter. This person wants it, and therefore they're trying to kill me, so I have to get them first. Whereas with Last of Us, it's genuinely kind of like, and I've talked about this on other podcasts before, it might boil down to as simple as, okay, there's two of us in a room and there's a bottle of water. In order for me to maybe not die of thirst at some point in the future, because I don't know when I'm going to see the next bottle of water, I need to kill you so that you don't take that. So there's a lot more different kind of morality balances between the two games. I find it very interesting. And look, Uncharted's really, really good. I'm not trying to say I'm disappointed or I don't like the games or whatever. They're just, at least from what I've done up to in this replay of Uncharted 2, it's a lot more simple. Where it's like, okay, go to the next bit, shoot a bunch of people, climb some stuff. And I do like the climbing a lot, and I do like the puzzle solving bits a lot. I find those quite interesting. But it does rely a lot more on like, hey, you're going to be in this building, it's going to collapse. Can you jump out in this sequence before that? Or like, there's a truck coming after you. Can you run away from it? The building collapsed. Can you know, very, very, very heavy on set pieces. And again, you can kind of look at, let's say, the Tomb Raider games. You look at the first lot of Tomb Raider games. Uncharted clearly took some influence from them. And then when Tomb Raider came around with its reboot in 2013, that clearly took influence from the newer Uncharted games. So they're all kind of borrowing stuff from each other, right? Which is interesting. But influence isn't really a bad thing. Anyway, that's my thoughts so far on Uncharted 2. I should be at least started with Uncharted 3 by the time we do the next podcast. I mean, I've got a busy couple of days ahead. But it shouldn't take me too much longer to get through Uncharted 2, and then I'll be starting Uncharted 3, and we'll see how far it. Again, I've played these games before, but as I mentioned on the last podcast where I talked about my Uncharted 1 playthrough, it's been nearly 10 years apparently since I played these games, because I think I've only played them through once. So, yeah. Anyway, that's it for all that. I've been playing COD as well, but I've got nothing sort of new to say about that. So, anyway, let's take a break and do some housekeeping. We'll see you for that in a minute. Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show.
All right, recently on Entertainment Talk, where are we at here? Just scroll down. Yes, recently on Entertainment Talk, so of course The Last of Us is back for Season 2. There are a few podcasts here I'm going to mention, so here we go. So World of The Last of Us podcast, the newest one is for Season 2, Episode 1. It is a bonus spoiler predictions episode. Basically, if you've not watched the cutscenes or played the game, don't listen to that episode. The idea behind that episode and future ones that are going to be similar is once we get to the end of the episode, or once we see an episode, so the first one in this case, now that we know where we're at the end of that episode, doing predictions based on, you know, pacing and how things are going and where we're at in the story and where we can end up in certain episodes and some other, you know, general spoiler talk and things like that, so you can listen to that one. Then, of course, my off-the-cuff first spoiler-free review for Last of Us Season 2, Episode 1. That one is completely spoiler-free, so even if you haven't seen the first episode yet, you can go in there completely safe and just give you my thoughts and feelings on the first episode of Last of Us Season 2. We'll be doing our spoiler review for that episode tomorrow, but that won't be future spoiler stuff for that. I explain what all the episodes are properly when you go to play them, so you shouldn't end up accidentally listening to spoilers, at least from our side. But yes, Wednesday is tomorrow, and me and David will be doing our review of season two episode one, the same way we usually do them, the recap style thing. So we'll be doing that tomorrow. Over on Hear Me Roar for Yellow Jackets, we've had the finale, season finale, hopefully not series finale, season 3, episode 10. No word or no renewal yet. Of course, it's from Paramount Plus and Showtime, so it's up to them or whoever decides all that stuff. So we're waiting for that. Over on the United cast, we drew 2-2 with Leon because our goalkeeper couldn't pick the ball up, essentially. We played the second leg of that game on Thursday. It's essentially 0-0. It's essentially kind of whoever can win that game is going to go through because it's level on the scoreline. So that's that one. Over on the World Last of Us again, our spoiler-free preview for Season 2. So normal, same sort of spoiler-free style for that one, so you can check out that one. Over on Game Talk last week, we talked about the Switch 2, we talked about AI in games and Ubisoft's IP, and we will be talking about Ubisoft again because someone had to say something stupid again, didn't they? So there we go. There's also my spoiler preview for Last of Us Season 2 as well. That is, of course, opening up the doors for the spoilers for the whole season and predicting for the season where things might go and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that's pretty much what we'll be doing on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get into some news. switching away from bad football results and dark storylines and things like that. Fortnite is obviously a big popular game. By the way, just a quick little, well, not really side note because it involves Fortnite. When we think of like the popular games that kids are playing these days, right? So Minecraft's obviously a big one that's just had its film come out. Don't plan on seeing that. I've already mentioned that before. It's doing very, very, very well at the box office though, which I guess that's good and all that. I'm quite surprised that Fortnite itself hasn't had a film yet. Maybe they'll do that. It's Epic Games, isn't it? Yeah, that has that. I'm surprised they haven't partnered with anybody to do a film yet, because we have had like, I think there's a Monopoly film in development. There's all these like board game films in development as well. There's like an Uno one. There's a Monopoly one. There is, I mean, heck, they made an Emoji film. I mean, I know that was Sony, that was a different company, but we're getting a few more like that. And I know it was a bit different. Obviously, we also had the Barbie film as well. I know that was kind of more of a live action sort of retelling of that. But maybe at some point soon, we'll get a Fortnite film. Not that I'm gonna watch it. I'm just surprised they haven't made that yet. So, anyway, somebody apparently you don't really know about, and somebody I listen to her music for almost every day. She's got some very, very good songs. Sabrina Carpenter, who's made a big splash in the last couple of years, has been added to Fortnite. Now, I did go and actually look. There was a 20-minute gameplay video. Didn't watch the whole thing. I just wanted to see a little splice of what she looked like. She's got a couple of different. Obviously, there's the pack thing that you can buy. And get her, not get her skin because that doesn't sound right, but get the skin of her character for the game. The same logic applies for every character. It's more like a costume, isn't it? I think costume is the better word to use in this situation. Because you can get costumes like, you know, the Batman one. They've had a whole bunch of characters in Fortnite. They've done a few celebrity ones as well. I can't remember all of them, but they've added a whole bunch of different people Fortnite to their game. Of course, the interesting part to remember with these is no matter who it is, whether it's Batman, who's known to not use guns, or Sabrina Carpenter, who I don't know if she's ever held a gun before, or any of these other people, they're all going to be shooting guns in this game and throwing grenades and shooting rocket launchers and gliding across the map with the glider thing. I'm sure it's got a particular name, but the glider that you use. Yeah, there's one that's like a blue dress that she's got, and one that is her. That there was two different ones I think that I saw. One was like a yellow dress and one was a blue one. I think the blue one is the one she wears on stage sometimes, which is cool. In terms of like how they've put her in the game, and that looks pretty accurate. I mean, of course, it's, you know, an animated sort of version. There's the animated sort of face look to her and all that sort of thing. But as somebody who actually does listen to her music, me, I just thought it was it's harmless and cool and interesting to kind of see her in the game. And see, I would say it was weird to kind of watch her character shoot guns, but I've seen so many different clips and things of other people in Fortnite shooting guns, like when they've had who have they had before? Who was like a bit odd. They've had like other celebrities in that. And it looks weird when all of them shoot guns because you don't expect to see, like, when you add, let's say, when they had like the Walking Dead characters, right? Like Rick and Michonne, I think Daryl was in there as well. We've seen them shoot guns on that show. That's not weird. Batman has, you know, had guns in his hand, but of course his whole thing is he's not supposed to use guns. So yeah, it's just a cool and nice thing that happened. It'd be interesting if they added, because Dua Lipa is one of my other favourite artists, and Lennon Stella as well. Although Lennon Stella's a bit more quiet these days, I don't quite know why. Add all three of them to the game. It'd just be quite fun. Because Dua Lipa's quite a big name as well. She was at the Royal Albert Hall last year and all that kind of stuff. So, as somebody who, because we I, obviously we. Talk through like the notes that we got before we start so that we know what we're going to talk about. And you didn't know who she was, so talk to me about that.
Yeah, I literally never heard of this person,
Wow.
but it's probably because of three things. One, I don't watch Disney preteen musical shows. I don't even watch Disney at all. I canceled my Disney Plus after Secret Invasion. That just pissed me off too much. I don't watch any of the celebrity singing competition, singing shows that's just old bag and it's become very, very formulaic. And three, unless you got somebody that can kick ass on guitar, I'm not listening to it just on general principle. I mean, you got a great voice, awesome, but I've known bands that on average voice, you get a good guitar player in there and it 1,000 times better than a soloist. I did find a list of celebrity skins in Fortnite. So some of the more notable ones, Travis Scott, Neymar, LeBron
Oh yeah, they
James,
had the name off, didn't they?
Bruno Mars,
Oh my God.
Patrick Mahomes, who's a American footballer, Mr. Beast, which weirdly kind of makes sense.
I don't understand why that guy's so popular.
Who?
Mr. Beast, like I've
Oh, me
seen
neither.
he does like big crazy game show stuff, but there's nothing that like, and I've not watched a lot of his stuff, but obviously very, very, I mean, he's got his own Amazon show as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
I never quite, and I got nothing against him per se. I've seen bits of him and there was nothing about him that made me go, yeah, I need to go and watch this guy's YouTube channel or whatever. And he's like really, really rich and really, really successful, which, hey, if you can do that, then
Yeah.
great. So yeah,
But
but I
then you got
just,
like Eminem, Lady Gaga, The Weeknd. And The Weeknd weirdly makes sense in the fact that it doesn't make sense, because you would think somebody like that, probably wouldn't be associated with video games. But then again, The Weeknd won a Nickelodeon Children's Choice Award for a song about doing so much cocaine you can't feel your face. So,
Just a
yeah,
reminder on
so.
that front, The Walking Dead once was nominated for the Nickelodeon Teens Kids Choice Awards. So,
Yeah.
yeah. And I think, what was the other show? What was it? It's a Netflix show. Why can't I think? Oh my God, why can't I think of what it was? Never mind. But yeah, Walking Dead got nominated for like the Nickelodeon. I remember we talked about that on a Walking Dead podcast for a review probably a few years ago. Nickelodeon Kids Choice Awards for The Walking Dead. It's like that's not supposed to be in that category. But anyway, yeah. Any other names you got there?
Most of them are just like video game celebrities, so they're ones that it wouldn't shock you. Like Laserbeam, who's a content creator out of Australia. That wouldn't shock you for him being in a video games where you shoot people, because he's done all kinds of Let's Plays with various different platforms and formats and whatnot.
But yeah, cool that Sabrina's in there. Again, if you don't like that, then don't buy the pack. And if you do like it, then do buy it. Vote with your wallet, as we always say. And we'll be talking about voting with your wallet later in this show as well. Yeah, some of her songs are Espresso, I think, by far is her best song. And that's the one that kind of gravitated me more towards her. She's got a song called Taste as well, which I didn't really like when I first listened to it. I just didn't really kind of get what the song. I knew what it was about, but I started getting more into that a bit more recently. And there was some other ones that she did as well. So those have been very good. All right, so we move off, unfortunately, from something fun and innocent and harmless to something just stupid. Ubisoft. I mean, you could say that about the whole company, but somebody somewhere at Ubisoft decided to talk yet again. They refused to take my advice. It says here, Ubisoft insists that buying games doesn't give players unfettered ownership rights to it, only a limited license access. Sorry, only a limited license to access the game. They've mentioned things like this before. This is not the first time Ubisoft has said something like this. And they've said, like, okay, buying a game doesn't mean you have ownership for it and all these stupid things. I just think sometimes when you've got a bad of a press that you've got at the moment, and look, if some of you are listening to this and you've enjoyed Ubisoft's recent games, let's say like, Assassin's Creed Shadows, you're allowed to do that, that's fine. If you brought a video game, regardless of who it's from, and you like it and you're enjoying it,
That's great. Nobody can take that away from you. Although apparently Ubisoft might try and take that away from you, I suppose. I guess, yeah, reverse what I've just said. I guess you could buy a game that you like from Ubisoft, and I guess they could take it away from you because that's kind of what they're talking about here. I remember there were some similar conversations when like Skull and Bones came out, the world's first quadruple A video game, which of course it isn't because it was in a bad state. I did see a video pop up for that, by the way, now that I just mentioned it, like a year two showcase. I don't know who's playing Skull and Bones. I don't know who that is for, or like, I didn't know they had a year one showcase, let alone a year two showcase. So I don't know if that's like a new season of content or something. But that came up, and that was, unless that's one of them things, when like a developer's already made certain content and they have to just kind of, they're in that license place when they sort of have to just get it out. A bit like what Suicide Squad did. Like they knew Suicide Squad was dead, but they had to just kind of churn out the, season two, three, and four, or whatever. It might be the situation like that, but I have not seen, because I get involved with discussions about, like, okay, what people are playing. No one said Skull and Bones for a long time, so I don't know who that year two showcase is for. Anyway. But yeah, when you're in the situation that you're in, and okay, some people do like Assassin's Creed Shadows, and again, that's great if you bought it and you enjoyed it, that's cool. Maybe you've played, I'm trying to think of other recent Ubisoft games, but I can't even think of what they've come out with. But yeah, when you have like, all the Not all the noise, let's call it, around Assassin's Creed, whether it was the diversity stuff, whether it was the other stuff, whether it was, well, any of the five or six different things that were wrong with that game before it was about to come out, and the delays and the sort of, I remember the wording around some of the delays was like, hey, we want to make sure like our top class features are polished and all this sort of thing. And look, if you don't think your video game's ready to release and you want to delay it, good. That's good. And look, I haven't played Shadows yet. I don't think you have, Robert, so we don't know kind of firsthand how good or bad the game is. But when you continue to come out with things like this, because Ubisoft has kind of been saying things in this region for what, like 5 years or something, maybe even longer than that. It's like this isn't even a sort of reading the room. Like you're failing to, on a very basic level, you're completely failing to read the room at the moment, let alone the idea of any of the CEOs or executives or higher up people in this, almost a club, in this company knowing what they're doing. None of you, none of you are reading the room right, and none of you are sort of doing what you should be doing. So yeah, for anybody, I guess I don't know if this applies to old games, new games, or whatever, or pre-orders or whatever, but I guess we should all be careful when it comes to Ubisoft games because, yeah, l limited license to access the game is how they're kind of phrasing it. So, I know you got some Ubisoft stuff as well, but what do you think, Robert, of Ubisoft opening their mouth and saying something stupid again?
99.9% of the time, I will never root on somebody to fail. I am rooting on Ubisoft to fail and close just so we can stop covering them every damn week. And as for that limited license, that's actually part of the ongoing lawsuit, and I found a more detailed. So here's the timeline of context. In March of last year, Ubisoft shut down the crew. And basically told everybody, no offline mode, go fuck off. And then the class action lawsuit
I didn't know that
was
part, but
filed in November last year, claiming that Ubisoft failed to clearly disclose the nature of the transaction, selling a full price product while retaining the right to revoke access at any time. February, Ubisoft filed a motion to dismiss the case, which has not been adjudicated on yet. According to the documents that have been reviewed by Polygon, the Ubisoft's legal team is stating that the reality is, quote, that consumers received the benefits of their bargain while we were explicitly notified at the time of purchase that they were purchasing a license. The filing further claims that Ubisoft misled purchasers of its video game, The Crew, into believing they were purchasing unfettered ownership rights to the game rather than a limited license, to which Ubisoft argued. And this is why I want them to fail, because they're arguing, quote, no actual harm occurred, and the plaintiff's claims of false advertising and unfair competition had no consignable injury. So the lawsuit should just dismiss. And oh my God, what store do you shop at to find the audacity to say that shit?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, where is that store? Is that like some white label Amazon Super Prime Plus that I don't know about? Yeah. You know, that gold plated audacity with brass balls to say that?
Mm.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah. Following on kind of from what I was saying last week, because I was sitting here listing Ubisoft's IP, which is why I put that in the title, I just want somebody else to buy the IP off them and actually do, because there's so many of that. I named, what, like 6 different IP that they're not even really doing anything with.
Mm-hmm.
Rayman being kind of a big one, and Splinter Cell, and I'm not going to sit here and name them all again. And it's really frustrating. This reminds me, it's interesting how the tables have slightly turned a little bit, right? Like, if you remember a couple of years ago when we were sort of talking about Konami in the same way, not in the way of like Konami keeps saying stupid stuff. It was more Konami's not saying anything to anybody and they're just letting pachinko machines rule their business. At least with Konami, they've come out with Silent Hill 2 Remake. Okay, that game wasn't for me. I was never really going to kind of... I didn't think I was going to enjoy that game, but I gave it a try and it just wasn't for me. But for the people that really enjoyed it and, like, have nostalgia for that game, it seemed to go down well, so that's good. They look like they're remastering, or they are remastering, Metal Gear Solid 3, which I think canonically is the first one. That's why they're doing that one first. That looks pretty decent, and maybe they'll do the other ones. So, even Konami, who are still in the list of like some of the worst video game companies ever, even Konami has woken up slightly before Ubisoft has. Now, I know there was a difference between, because even Ubisoft has like slowed down their releases slightly. They used to sort of release a lot of games. We've now switched from a time where Ubisoft was putting out subpar stuff, but people were still kind of eating it up because it was the only thing they were getting from those IP. And where we had Konami that was just sitting on Metal Gear, sitting on Silent Hill, sitting on Castlevania, not really doing anything with them. And, like, not really saying anything to anybody about those games and just, you know, pachinko machines for the win kind of thing. And now we switch to Ubisoft's the one that's causing all this mess and just saying too much stuff and just kind of annoying everybody, to Konami's actually decided to wake up and started trying to do something. And I couldn't have predicted 2 or 3 years ago that that was what would have happened with Konami. I mean, okay, do we, you know, trust Konami? Things a bit soon to use the word trust, but at least they've woken up and done something in the last couple of years. And look, whether it's, you know, Star Wars Outlaws or Skull and Bones, whoever is playing it, or Shadows, if you're enjoying all those games, that's great. But it's funny how those tables have even kind of turned a little bit. So, but like, it's not even kind of, because there's two sides to this kind of thing, right? It's like, okay, what games are you putting out and how good are they? And what is it that you're saying to your audience? And Ubisoft just can't seem to shut up for some reason. Because at least, again, with Konami, and I know it sounds like I'm giving Konami a lot of credit, I'm just trying to compare two subpar companies, I suppose. At least they're kind of quietly sitting there and putting these games out that people are at least looking forward to and enjoying. And Konami isn't the one saying, like, you don't own your games or whatever.
I think we can kind of almost appreciate the Konami that sort of woken up a bit, is trying something. They're not saying a lot, but sometimes it's better to just not say a lot than just come out with something stupid continuously and just keep going on about, like, yeah, these sorts of things. So, I don't know, man. They've got a lot of work to do. So, whether they do that work or try to do it, or I don't know how that sort of works out. So, did you have any Ubisoft stuff that connected to this? I don't know if you had anything else.
That was it. I mean, that's more than enough. I'm
Yeah,
really
I just wondered if
hoping.
you had any other bits. That was all. So.
No, I'm just really hoping next week we can do a podcast without having to talk about Ubisoft.
Hopefully, hopefully. That kind of reminds me of, you remember when that big shit show with Activision was going on, and we did like a 3-part, 3-week, but we just
Yep.
sometimes, you, as much as we don't like to cover negative stuff, and the gaming space is in a bit of a negative space right now, even though we have good games coming out and things, sometimes you just can't ignore certain stuff. And like, I think the Activision example was probably the biggest one we ever had, where it's like, okay, if we didn't talk about this, it would actually stand out as being really weird. Plus, it was absolutely dominating the gaming news at the time because it
Oh
was just
yeah.
so big. So, yeah. Anyways, move on from
That'd be
that.
like you covering all the football games and not talking about the Premier Cup.
Right, let's move on from that to something I like more, and something that is receiving some very interesting coverage. So let's talk about The Last of Us. Not the episodes or anything like that. Those are for the separate podcast. So there was rumors of this for a bit, and I think I was going to include a news piece on it at one point, but it's happened now anyway. The Last of Us Complete Edition. I think I'm going to enjoy and kind of have fun talking about. There's two different crowds of people that are seemingly panicking about this game or this version of the game in completely different ways, and I find them both very fascinating. So let's just go through the details of what you actually get with this. So The Last of Us Complete Edition is announced for PS5, and after I read this, I'm going to tell you what I think is going to happen in the future. But let's read this first. Last of Us Complete Edition has been announced for PS5. The Last of Us Complete Edition is now available digitally on PS5. Includes Last of Us Part 1 and 2 Remastered. Collector's Edition launches July 10th, so that's the physical version. Exclusive to PlayStation Direct. I guess that means you just buy it direct from PlayStation. Collector's Edition includes a steel bookcase with physical discs, custom collector's box, set of unique lithographs. I don't think I've ever seen that word before. Both games feature PS5 enhancements like DualSense support and 3D audio, and the PS5 bits and the Pro bits and pieces, if you've got a Pro, obviously, as well.
Well, you forgot the most valuable part. A
For the
thank you letter from Neil Druckmann.
okay,
That's actually in the box.
oh, right. It doesn't actually say that here. Yeah, those things, then the support and the 3D audio stuff. Then Part 2 Remastered adds the no-return roguelike mode, which is what I streamed on Saturday. Lost levels, so those were bits that were cut from the game, but they put the rough bits in as, like, showcase parts. And behind-the-scenes commentary, so, you know, the director's commentary for the cutscenes. And then the guitar-free play mode as well. Okay, so let me explain the two different crowds, and I'm not sure how much crossover there is with these two crowds. There is the one crowd that's like seemingly still panicking, and I use the word panic lightly, of like, oh my god, it says complete. That means there's no Last of Us Part 3. Oh my god, that means that when we, you know, that when we get finished with seasons 2, 3, and maybe 4, then that's it, and The Last of Us is over. And it's like, okay, just calm down. I really don't think some people understand, and I've seen Neil Druckmann get asked this question like 5 or 6 different times, of like, hey Neil, when's Last of Us 3 coming out? And you just get this sense from him of like, I kind of want to stop being asked that question, not because I don't like the question, but because I'm working on Intergalactic and I have to do that. I have to do that first before I further explore the idea of part three. Anyway, so there's people kind of freaking out about like, oh my god, this is complete edition. That means that's it. There's no more games. And it's like, that's not really, that just means complete for now. So like the bits that we have for now. And there's the other crowd that like, and I understand this other crowd's sentiment, but I don't think it applies the same way to this. Which the other crowd sentiment is like, oh my god, it's another re-release, it's another master remaster, it's another thing. This isn't another, like, this is just all of the newer bits that we've had. So part one, part two remastered, and then part two with all its extra bits and pieces, part one with all its extra bits and pieces in one bundle. This is not unusual for a company to do. It's like when you have, let's say, the Batman Arkham games, you put that into a packet, you sell it as a, you know, the complete Arkham trilogy collection, even though it's actually supposed to be four games. And then you have things like, you know, the Nathan Drake collection that I'm playing right now, one, two, and three in a packet. Or when you get, let's say, Lord of the Rings trilogy box set, or any of those kinds of things. This is just a bundle. This is not kind of. And if you already own the, let's say, the newer versions of one and two, which I do, you don't need this. In fact, the interesting thing, because I saw this on the PlayStation Store, and I thought, I wasn't planning on buying any of this because I already own both games. So because I've already bought the one and two remastered and have, I think, one of them installed, yeah, on my PS5, it didn't let me buy the digital version because the two games that are included. So when I click on that on the PlayStation Store, because obviously it's at the front, it takes me to a page that says, here's Last of Us Part 1, Last of Us Part 2. And all it says to me is it gives me a download option. Which I guess I can't technically buy, purchase something I already have, unless you do something else with that. Because the two products it brings up in the page are two separate products I have already bought and already own. And one of them, in fact, is already installed. So you've got that as well, because I know some companies have had this thing where let's say they remaster a game, they remove the old one from the store, so let's say like a PS4 version of a game, and because the newer one is more expensive, they'll try to tip you, well, not try to tip you more towards that, forcibly tip you more towards that, because like, hey, here's the new shiny bright one that you want, we're taking the old one off the store. So you can't buy the cheaper version of our game. We want you to buy the more expensive version. That's something that happened a lot of times. So yeah, I found that interesting as well, because I was like, okay, what's it gonna say in terms of like, you know, price and that sort of thing. But all it said to me was, you've purchased these two items, you've got one of them installed, basically. This is obviously just because, okay, season two is out or was coming out, and hey, if you like the show, here's the games. Here's the games in one complete package. So hey, if you like the episodes that you see, here's the game based on the that the show's based on. And to me, it's a simple kind of just marketing. I mean, why would they not do this? And then you can put out a fancy new trailer and go, hey, here's, you know, footage from both games, complete edition, you know. Come and buy it now, sort of thing. But it's not like this is the first set of games that have ever been bundled into a collection before. Heck, I'm surprised that they haven't, you know, and they do like the console bundle stuff, and they have like, because they had a new Part 2 controller, a new DualSense. I'm surprised they haven't given like a PS5 Pro cover thing, put the new DualSense in with that, and then bundled Last of Us 1 and 2, and then put it out for like $800 or something, because they could probably do that as well. So I'm more surprised they haven't gone that far, let alone what they're doing here. And in terms of all the other comments of like, you know, where's Bloodborne remastered, where's all this and all that, I'm in agreement of like, okay, there's Bloodborne fans, just an example, that have been waiting, yeah, 10 years for that game to be updated or remastered or had something new done with it. And yeah, I agree with that in terms of the, like, some older games that Sony hasn't touched for ages. I mean, just look at Astrobot's Crash Site. There's loads of stuff there, loads of characters there that Sony hasn't touched for a long, long time that they could go back to doing something with.
It's just because Last of Us is the hot thing right now, when season two is coming out or has already come out or whatever, and this is just marketing for that. So, yeah. Anyway, any thoughts on this bundle?
I'm a little weirded out that it's so expensive. I mean, technically it is at a discount because I just went on Amazon and looked for the other two. So if you buy them separately, individually, you're saving a whole $4, you know, and then you don't get the thank you card from Neil Druckmann because, you know, that's, like I said, that's the real value. But yeah, I mean, it's, I think we're just have been in a state that people are so annoyed with everything.
Oh yeah.
And I have a story that shows into that. Well, actually, I have two stories that show into that. But people are just sick and tired of everything being so damn expensive, and they're just lashing out at anything and everything. I mean, me personally, it doesn't affect me because one, I don't own a PS5. Two, I'm not ever going to own a PS5. Three, I did finish Last of Us Part One, and it wasn't bad. I didn't, you know, I'm not like stalkery obsessed with the IP like you are. But it was okay.
Funny that you say Stalker, considering something that's in this week's episode. Yeah.
I'm psychic like that. Or psychotic, take your pick.
Can you be both? I don't know. Maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, getting back to the point, I think people are just so frustrated with everything that anything sets them off.
Yeah. And look, if you already own these two games, which I do, you don't need this. If you don't like The Last of Us, or you're not interested, or whatever, then you don't need it. So. And look, if you're somebody who's like, let's say you're a massive Bloodborne fan, and you go, oh my god, Sony's paying so much attention to Last of Us, and they've let Bloodborne sit on the side. I don't necessarily agree with that, but it's like, okay, I can see a fan of a different series being frustrated of like, okay, this thing over here is getting so much attention, and you've left Bloodborne alone for like 10 years or something, and not really done anything with it. I get that, and there's games that are on the PlayStation family, let's say, that I'm disappointed that I haven't been touched for, again, such a long time. And that was one of the interesting experiences with like Astrobot, was like, oh my god, remember this series from like 5, 10, 15 years ago, whatever, and here's the cool little bot for it and all this sort of thing. And brings back cool memories. So, but yeah, that's out if you want it, and if you don't want it, you don't have to buy it. Again, voting with your wallet. If you don't want to buy something because you don't want it, you don't have to buy it, then vote with your wallet and buy the things that you do want. It's like I always say about these live action Disney films and that. If you don't like them but you want to keep hate watching them, don't buy a ticket to go to the cinema to see it, because then that raises the box office for them, and it doesn't matter necessarily if you go online and you say the film's bad, because if you keep giving your money for them and keep giving them tickets and whatever, it tells them a different story. So that's what voting with your wallet is called, and we should do it more. And by the way, I'm not saying like, hey, go and pirate these films. I'm saying, okay, if you hatefully curious, let's say, about these films, just watch them on Disney Plus or something when they come out, because, well, that will cost you less money. So whatever. Anyway, that's all the news I got this week. How about yourself, Robert?
Oh, staying with PlayStation and, you know, what I was saying earlier, do you have a PS5 digital edition in the UK or Europe yet? If not, you're too late because the price went up yesterday. In the UK, the price increased to £429.99, which is an increase of £40. And in the other European countries, it went up to €499.99. Euros, which is an increase of 50 euros. Australia went up to 749, and New Zealand went up to 859. The standard edition with disk drive did not change, but Sony is using the opportunity of the massive run on the disk drives when the PS5 Slim came out to raise the price of the disk drives. that he just drives with him. That would be 70 pounds UK, 80 euros Europe, 125 Australia, and 140 New Zealand.
Jesus.
In a statement issued to the PlayStation blog, the hardware manufacturer said the following: with a backdrop of a challenging economic environment, high inflation, fluctuating exchange rates, SIE has made the tough decision, I'm sure they really sweated over that, to raise the recommended retail price of PlayStation 5 consoles in select markets in Europe, Middle East, Africa, Australia, and New Zealand. Now remember, one, this console is 5 years old, and two, this is the second time they've raised the price on the console. I forget when they did it. The first time it was like a year and a half ago, but still.
Similar to that, yeah.
I remember every other console prior to this generation, after 5 years, got a price drop. Usually when the pro version came out.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're just like, charge more, take it. If you don't like it, tough.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to echo what you said a bit earlier, I hope everybody that's got whichever version you want has already got them, like myself. When did I get mine? Was it like a year after release or something? I can't remember. I wasn't there day one. It was, I think, a bit later on. So, but yeah, it is what it is. And I don't recall if you said, was there a pro price increase?
No, pro price hasn't changed.
Thank God.
Because it's still way overpriced.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah, so, okay, what ones? So they've got the standard one with disc drives. That's the one that I've got. That's the original version, right? Then they've got digital, which obviously doesn't have a disc drive, which is cheaper than that. And then just the Pro without disc drive. Obviously, the disc drive attachment is optional. So it's just three. It feels like they have had about five, but yeah, so. But yeah, it is what it is with the price. I'm sure they got their own reasons and whatnot for all this kind of stuff. So there we go. Anyway, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, Marathon, which is the latest game to come out of Bungie, had its gameplay revealed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this wasn't an open beta or a closed beta. This is more famous people playing it to try to build up hype.
Yeah,
like I've got gameplay here, first impressions. Somebody I've not heard before called Jack Frags.
Oh, he's
but he's got 4.2 million subs, so willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Former IGN personalities Destin Laguerre and Naomi Kyle both played it, and they had their own gameplays. I've been looking at a little bit of it. It doesn't look bad. It just looks uninspired. It's like, it's very meh.
Yeah, yeah. I've a few things to say about this, but I didn't, because I didn't know this was coming up because I've not paid attention to Bungie, because they don't make things I'm interested in at the moment. They could in the future. I saw there was like, you know, the presentation thing and whatnot that came out. I saw a few little clips on Twitter and stuff like that. It did look a bit generic. Now, I will say, in terms of my actual thoughts on the gameplay, I've not seen a ton of it, so I can't give you, like, a, let's say, full impression of it. And I was hearing words floating around, like, okay, looks a bit similar to Concord, looks a little bit kind of generic. And from the bits I did see, it did look a bit like that. Granted, I didn't watch, you know, the full presentation. I didn't sort of see it properly. And I kind of thought, okay, should I go and watch the whole thing and then, you know, talk about it on the podcast? But then every time I sort of came across the video, it was like, you know, 10 minutes or so, I just didn't feel the motivation to click on it. Granted, I could go and watch the whole 8 minute thing, be impressed, and who knows, but I just didn't get the willpower to kind of click on the video. The one thing I will say about Bungie, which I find very interesting, so when The Last of Us Online, which ended up being its name, was in development, whether it was going to be Factions 2, Factions, or Online, or whatever it was going to be called. And they were in development with the game, and obviously Neil talked about it a bit, and all that sort of thing. One of the reasons they came to a stopping point on it was they tried to get a second opinion, and they went,
in family, as they call it, from Bungie. And of course, Bungie working on, they used to work on Halo, and of course, they've worked on Destiny for a long, long time. And they got a second opinion from Bungie. And the one thing that Bungie said at the time was, okay, if you want this is great, but if you want to do this, you're not going to really be able to do what you're known for, which is these single player games. And of course, at the time, Neil Druckmann was trying to get Intergalactic off the ground, and probably other things as well. I mean, I don't know how far back that conversation went. And said, like, okay, if like it, yeah, if you're going to do this game, if you're going to do Last of Us Online, it's going to take away too many resources from your studio, and you're not really going to be able to do the single player focus thing that you're known to do. And then I think there was some echoes along the line saying like they considered, because I think one of the things that was considered is, if Naughty Dog makes the game, obviously releases it and that, and then when you get to the live service part, the adding content, if they then handed that off to somebody else, and Bungie was rumored to be one of the people considered for that, and it didn't quite work out. And now if they come out with this game called Marathon, which brand new IP, so always risky, never know if it's going to work, if it's going to be a success, whatever. We can look back on a lot of franchises that exist now and think, oh, they're really, really good, but nobody knew how good these things were going to be before they came out. You can apply that logic to a lot of different IP. If you come out with this, right, and I don't know what the situation is, by the way, between them doing this and what they're doing with Destiny. I don't know if they're like, if Destiny is going to be a thing still, or I don't really know how that's being sort of segregated and separated. If you come out with this and it falls on its face for whatever reason, right? There's a lot of different reasons this game could fall on its face. If it has ultimately come down to you, Bungie, as a studio, of course, you've gone and made this new thing. You could have either had this, or had Naughty Dog hand you The Last of Us Online for you to work with. Now, if you're, again, certain executives are more stupid than they should be. For the people involved in that decision of, okay, should we go ahead with launching Marathon, or should Naughty Dog make Last of Us Online and then hand it to Bungie? Which one, they can't do both of them, but which one of the two things should Bungie work on? Now, of course, we know what Last of Us is capable of because it's been around for 12 years and it's a known entity, whereas Marathon isn't. We have no idea how good or bad the game is going to be when it comes out, or if the content that they add later is going to be good. And I know it's a completely different franchise, completely different genre, and everything like that. But if you're kind of looking at that from a business perspective, okay, which one of those two things is more reliable? Having Naughty Dog make The Last of Us Online and handing it to Bungie, or having Bungie make a new IP? Granted, they've done well with Destiny, did very well with Halo, and they paid what, 8 billion for Bungie, so a lot of money. But which one of those two situations is more reliable? Now, I can sit here as a Last of Us fan and tell you Last of Us is more reliable because I don't know how good Marathon's going to be or how reliable it's going to be. But if you're looking at that as more of a business side, I think you lean more on Last of Us because it's just the more known and reliable IP, and it's the more known quantity. I don't know if all those decisions were made in that way, but that feels like where that was sort of going. Because timeline-wise, it kind of feels like Bungie would have brainstormed this at roughly the same time Naughty Dog would have brainstormed Last of Us Online. That's just what I'm getting from that. Anyway, what do you think of what Bungie could have ended up doing?
Oh, I think the biggest problem that most people are having is that it is going to be, and this is according to Marathon's official Twitter X account, Marathon will be a premium title, details announced this summer. So this is an online multiplayer only game that you're going to have to pay full price for. Then they say premium, not full price. So figure 40 to 60 bucks. Now that apparently full price is 80 to 90. And so people are already calling it Concord 2.0, which is very premature. And
That's
as
kind of
I've
just the
always,
buzzword at the moment, right? Like,
yeah, it's a buzzword.
if you look generic, if you look like you're gonna flop, and you're in the sci-fi genre as well, then you're Concord too. So,
Yeah. And since this isn't tied, even though this is a Sony game, this isn't tied to only Sony. The real judgment from me is going to come when they do their open beta and we see what those Steam stats are. Obviously, people are going to open beta on PlayStation 5, but for shooters, you need that PC audience, especially for this kind of a game that's, like imagine if Marvel Rivals didn't have PC support. It wouldn't have nearly the popularity that it does. And Concord had no PC audience, and it died a very quick death.
Well, it only lived for what, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Was it 2 weeks? Oh my God.
It was actually technically less, but it's just easier to say 2 weeks.
But what do you think in terms of what I said with like, okay, you can like Bungie's live service for the next, let's say, 5 years is either Last of Us Online handed down from Naughty Dog or Marathon. That's what it felt like it kind of came down to.
That's one of those things that you're never going to get an answer to
I know.
definitively. Because we both know that there is a massive fan base for Last of Us, regardless of the version. And I know you never played it, but I have a lot of friends that did. They played the PS4 Last of Us 1 multiplayer, and they said it was really good, that it was really well balanced, very smart, fit very well within the game world itself. And then, so you've got a known IP with already a platform and a blueprint on what to do and just take it to the next level versus a brand new IP, but you have the potential to have a wider fan base because of all the PC stuff. That's one of those, you need to be able to look into the multiverse and see a world where the other one came out. And yeah, you're never gonna be able to figure that one out just because we're never gonna be able to know the data.
The only other element of that, I suppose, is like, okay, Bungie, more of a sci-fi studio, right? Halo, Destiny, etc. And Naughty Dog obviously has been working with Last of Us for 12 years. You might have ended up with a situation where, even if from what I'm saying business-wise with IP, if Last of Us makes more sense because it's a known entity, known franchise, and Marathon isn't because it would be a brand new IP, that doesn't necessarily mean that Bungie itself would have been good at doing Last of Us. Not because they're not talented or whatever, but look at what Marathon is and look at what Last of Us is. They're two completely different things. Now, I'm not saying the studios can't, pivot and change and do things like that, but that is a pretty big difference going from something like, let's say, Destiny to Last of Us. I'm sure they would, if that had happened, I'm sure they would have had like consulting teams and stuff from Naughty Dog, like giving them, because these studios do help us out, do help each other out on that. There's things like the Decima engine, which get used for Death Stranding and for Horizon, I think it's those two games anyway. So there is little bits of sharing and little bits of support from studio to studio, but I don't know. So anyway, like you
Have
said,
you ever heard the old joke of what a consultant is?
no, tell me about, yeah, what's that?
You con people, then insult them. So you're a consultant.
Nice. Cool. What else do you want to talk about this week?
Well, the last thing that I have to talk about is that Doug Bowser, president of Nintendo of America, is living up to his name and launching Nintendo into their villain arc. Did you hear anything about him just being an absolute dumbass?
Not really, no. Not after like the Nintendo presentation stuff that we talked about. So
Yeah. So in an interview with Canada's CBC, which is their version of the BBC, Nintendo of America president Doug Bowser said that the company, quote, recognizes that there are some people that may not be able to afford the Switch 2's price point and the Switch 2 games price point. That is why we want to make sure other Switch platforms available. Also, people still have an opportunity to come into our gaming universe and be part of the characters in these worlds and see value if they, if you will, at whatever rung that they come in at, which people immediately started linking him to 2016's Don Mattrick, saying, "Unfortunately, we have a product for people who aren't able to get some form of
Oh my god, I
connectivity.
remember
It's
that,
called the Xbox 360." And this
yeah.
is on top of the fact that if you try to migrate your Switch One games to the Switch Two and you want to upgrade them, you got to pay for it, or you got to pay for their online service to upgrade it. And the game chat is locked behind that game service paywall,
Oh.
as is half the other online features. And they're charging you $10 to get the Welcome to the Switch 2 game that lets you run around with a little character telling you what all the different things do. Oh, yeah, that famous C button to do the clips and the records and whatever. That only works if you're a paid online subscriber. So they actually locked a damn button behind a paywall.
So what happens if you don't have that and you press it? It just says like feature unavailable or something.
I don't know, because I'm not going to buy a Switch 2.
Me
But
neither,
that's
so.
because of the pricing thing. It's because I never play my Switch 1. I'm half a mind to sell it, but I'm also half a mind to wait till after the Switch comes out and nobody Switch 2 comes out, nobody can get it, and I get a higher price for my Switch.
Maybe I should do the same. Yeah, because if you remember from a while ago, I was going to get rid of mine. Because not only do I not use it, I actually need to look for where it is again. Yeah, I think it's in this room somewhere. The box is very big, so I should be able to find it when the time comes. I'm just glad from everything that you've said that I'm not going to be buying a Switch 2. A because of again I had fallen out of love with their library. B because obviously money, and C because you still got shitty Joy-Cons, I'm not even joking.
Yep.
Yeah, I know
And
that.
he actually goes further in that interview, sticking his foot in his mouth, saying the Switch 2 and Switch 2 games pricing is, quote, appropriate for the value of the machine and the gameplay experience overall, to which basically everybody is like, bruh.
Yeah, $80-$90 games to play on the with those Joy-Cons. I know I keep mentioning them. I can't. I just can't get over it. I just I just still remember the part where they're like, hey, it connects with the magnetic thing now, and I'm like, just go away. Please just make something better than what this is. Yeah, like I remember when we first saw them, I was like, oh. They're still the same, and in the way they went, hey, they're magnetic now, and I'm like, I don't care. That doesn't make them better. If anything, I think that might cause some interesting situations to happen. So, because when they said like, oh, the Joy-Cons are magnetic, I'm like, do you know the kind of things that especially kids nowadays get into, and like what chaos that could cause? I don't know. There might be yeah, be careful, everybody. Yeah, he's said some stupid things, and hopefully he can fix the situation. But yeah, this is very interestingly comparable to I still remember when Don Mattrick, who, by the way, looking back on him now, was never ever a fit for like head of a console thing. Like there's just some people you listen to in their jobs, and you're like, no, you just sh you might be good at other jobs in similar areas. This ain't the one that's gonna be, this ain't gonna work for you. This ain't gonna be like a good fit. So yeah, it's funny to kind of look back on that. But yeah, I remember when he came, what was it? He came out and said like, hey, for people that don't have online and stuff like that, there's an Xbox 360.
Yep.
It's like, but don't you want people to buy your Xbox One because it's your big new thing and it will make you money and there's games tied to it that can't be played on the previous thing and etc. etc. That was yeah, because that wasn't that when they had the always online or the check-in online and it will like boot you out your games or whatever, and then they had to roll that back. So Interesting times. Anyway, what's your thoughts on this?
I can't. I just don't get how people can say something that tone deaf, that stupid. I mean, and he's been president for a while. I forget when Reggie Fils-Aimé left. I think he's still working as like a consultant CEO at
Something like that.
GameStop.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just one of those things
I'd
that,
say about 3 or 4 years ago, maybe.
yeah, 3 or 4 years. So he's been in the job long enough to get some training on interview speak. And we've talked about this with Sarah Bond, who I think is a really good at her job, but she never learned press speak.
Yeah, PR speak, yeah. Yeah. Which even people like footballers have to learn as well, because it's sort of okay.
Yeah.
Let's say you get smashed 5-0, and then you're one of the defenders, and you're this, debut 18-year-old player or something, and like, hey, what'd you think of the game or whatever? And you're on camera live on TV. So, yeah, seen some interesting results from things like that. So.
Probably my favorite thing with that, because it was half a troll, half dead serious. There's an American football player called oh God, I can't think of his name now. Give me one second.
When you say football, do you mean
American football.
like your version of football?
Yeah, Marshawn Lynch. I don't know why his name didn't come up in my head, but he was playing in the Super Bowl, and it's part of their NFL contract. That if you make it to the Super Bowl, you have to make yourself be available for interviews. And he hates the press. He hates the press. And he did not want to go do the interviews, but he would have gotten like something like a $2 million fine if he didn't go. So he went to the interview, and literally every single question they asked him, he said, "I'm only here because I don't want to get fined." Actually, I think I can play you that article.
Damn. Crazy. I think
Yeah.
I remember something with like Hair Redknapp as well at one point. He said some wild stuff
Yeah,
sometimes as
let's
well.
see. Let me know if this audio comes through, Gear.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It kind of half came through. The same thing happened with the first audio bit that you played. It played like half of it and then just went off, so. Anyway. All right, is that all the news you've got for this week?
Yep, that's all I got.
All right, cool. We've got two bits of feedback. If you'd like to write into the show, let us know your thoughts on anything we've talked about. Let us know what you're playing, all that sort of thing. Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, social media, eTalk UK or Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. Abed writes in and says, "So why did you decide to do these podcast projects? I like them so far, just asking what spurred on the idea." Well, Last of Us Season 2 was coming up, and I thought, okay, as much as, in the future I can watch it as many times as I want, I suppose, you're only really gonna do that 7-week event like once. And again, you can only see the first day. You can only see something once for the first time. Like, you never, no matter how many times you go back and watch or play something, you're only gonna have that first experience once, right? And I thought, like, okay, I should just do something. Even though I've already done a lot of podcasts and a lot of things for it, I should do something like special for it. And then I thought, okay, if I go, if I the idea I kind of had was, okay, because we had the first game, the first season, we then know what that looks like from an adaptation standpoint, then go through half of game two, or where I think season two could end. And now that we had a sample size of what an adaptation looks like based on material we had, try to use that and judge that in a comparing, revisiting way as to what game two for season two could look like. And then I had that as kind of the first idea, and then I went on the bit more thing where it was like, okay, the whole PS3 thing, and play that version because I never had played it before, and that would be interesting to sort of, go back to the original version, which I never played, and everything else like that. And then I decided, like, okay, I want to revisit. And then I thought, okay, because I've done so much Last of Us stuff with that, like, okay, I hadn't, because there's the two Naughty Dog things I love, which is Crash Bandicoot and then which is Naughty Dog, sorry, Last of Us. I then thought, okay, you know what? I haven't played Crash Bandicoot for a while. So I'll go back, I want to replay through those. Of course, 1, 2, 3, 4, and Team Racing. Those are the sort of canonical five games that we have. And do a rankings for them because I just hadn't revisited them for a while. And then, yeah, and then. So I was just seeing that, yeah, PSG have knocked Aston Villa out. And then I kind of thought, like, okay, I haven't revisited the Uncharted games for a bit. And then it kind of snowballed into this sort of bigger thing from there. But yeah, it just sort of went. I didn't have all of these ideas from the first part. It was sort of, oh, I'm doing this bit, and then I'll expand it into this bit, and then did the comparing revisiting thing, and then thought, hey, I haven't revisited Crash Bandicoot for a while. Let's go back to, let's go back to where Naughty Dog started and just see what that's all kind of like. And then it just sort of rolled on from there, really. So that's and then I have one more to do for all of this, for the Naughty Dog stuff, and then I have one more podcast project to do, but it's not got anything to do with any of those games. It's something completely different. So yeah, it was just a passion project that started out as something admittedly not small, because it was okay, replay the first game, rewatch season one, play half of game two. And then I thought, okay, then play the PS3 version of one and then do the thing from there. Plus, I went and watched some of the older, like, documentary stuff. Because, for example, I'd never seen, like, the documentary for the first game. So I went and watched that for the first time. Then, because I happened to be watching the season one on Blu-ray, because I nicely got given that for Christmas. There was a bunch of extras, so I just started. I actually ended up watching all the extras on there. There's a lot of them, but they're all quite short things. So I ended up kind of doing that, and then it just yeah, just kind of snowballed from there. So yeah, any thoughts on all of those things? Guessing you muted your mic because I was talking. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Sorry, I
All
had it
right.
muted for something else and I
Okay.
forgot. Yeah, I used to buy the box sets all the time for all that extra stuff because it was never on the streaming services.
No, no.
Until I move and actually get some physical space, I'm not going to be able to do that for a while. And there's a couple that I really kind of wanted to get. I just don't have the space for it.
Yeah. Cool. And then Josh writes in and says, a question for Robert. I think you play on PC and Xbox mainly. That's the first question. What do you prefer? And do you sometimes go controller on PC?
Mostly gaming, I've been on my PC because a lot of the games that I've been playing have been the indie AA stuff. I haven't picked up a AAA game since Frostpunk 2. Like I mentioned earlier at the start of the podcast, that long ass title one, that's an indie, but it's also $25, so it's a lot
Excuse me.
friendlier on my budget. And there's like three or four other indie games that I have a on my wish list. I have done controls on my PC from time to time, but the games I tend to play on PC tend to be more keyboard and mouse, especially any kind of like strategic, turn-based strategy game, like any kind of Command and Conquer or Civ game or anything like that. It just doesn't work on a controller. Yeah, you can plug your Xbox, you can't plug a wireless keyboard into your Xbox, but yeah, it's just easier on keyboard. Now when I get my zombie on and play my 9,000th hour of State of Decay, I'm on my Xbox. But yeah, I'm about 70% 70% PC, 30% Xbox.
Nice. That is one little detail of a thing I appreciate on COD is when you're in a lobby with other people, it tells you not only what platform they're on, but what controller they're using. So sometimes it has the PC label, but then it says controller. Just so you kind of know who you're with and also what you're up against from the enemy team as well. So that's quite nice sometimes. It didn't used to do that. So of all the things that don't work on COD, that's something nice that does actually work. So that's nice. All right, that's what we've got for you for this week. Thank you very much for listening. We will have, I guess, another podcast next week. I will be a bit older next week as well, and we will have had another episode of The Last of Us. So look out for all that chaos again this week and next week, because we've still got tomorrow's episode review to do as well. All right, if you want to support the content that we do, because we're doing a fair bit of it at the moment, there are actually five films I want to see right now. One of them is called Novocaine, which looks like it's already gone from cinemas and is on digital already. So well done to whoever managed the box office for that, because you obviously failed. There's one called Drop, which looks interesting. There's Warfare. I almost keep saying Warframe. That's what one of those games is called. Warfare, which is Alex Garland's new film, which I really like Civil War, so I'm looking forward to that. Obviously Sinners, which is very, very big. Michael B. Jordan, Hailee Steinfeld. And there is, I know I was going to forget the name of the last one. What's the Rami Malek ones? Not Sinners.
Amateur.
Amateurs. That's it. I'm interested in that one. So, but I can't see them all at once. So, what I'm genuinely going to have to do is the films that I think are going to be more available later on, save those for later, because with things like Warfare and let's say The Amateur, I think I'm gonna have to watch those ones quicker because I don't think they're gonna be out for as long. The two I'm most looking forward to out of all those is probably Sinners and Warfare, but I think those are gonna be out for longer, so I think I might I have to do like a different strategy here where I not necessarily watch the one I'm looking forward to the most first. So I think I'm gonna have to try and see, I think, Amateur sooner rather than later, because that doesn't feel like a film that's gonna be available for long. Plus, all these films are gonna be taking box office from each other, and then you've got Minecraft still sitting around and Snow White still sitting around and all these other films. So
Well, nobody's going to see Snow White.
that's true. It's what I mean though is it's still got a lot of screenings out and in the way. So yeah, they're all gonna have to share with each other, and hopefully I can see all of them on the big screen, but that might not necessarily happen, and that's not in my control. So,
Yeah, see,
we'll
I'm the
see.
exact opposite. If unless it's a cinematic thing I need to see on the big screen, I just wait till it's a $5 rental on my Xbox. It's like I'm like 80% sure I'm gonna go see the Superman one in the cinema. Did you see that report that came out of CinemaCon? They
Which
did a
one?
test screening of it of the Superman movie.
Oh, another one?
Obviously, it's
Okay.
not completely done. It's still got the CGI still working on it, but it got very, very positive reviews. To one person saying, "Fantastic Four is fucked," as a review for the Superman movie. And the Fantastic Four actually went down in my general desire to see it because they're completely changing Johnny Storm.
It's going to be interesting though, because in July, I think three back-to-back weeks is, I don't know which order they're in, but the new Jurassic, the new Superman, and then the Fantastic Four. So whoever arranged that is, I mean, they're all different. They're all owned by different companies. Yeah, I think one of them's going to have to move out of the way because I don't think the box office can handle all of that. So we'll have to see. It's all about which films are selling best and who's getting seen more, because if you're getting seen less, then I think that means that your screenings go down and you end up on digital sooner rather than later. So we'll see. Anyway, Entertainment Talk, the dog podcast platforms, Entertainment Talk for TV, games, films, Monday night podcasts. I'm planning on seeing those three films as well. I really hope that this new Jurassic is better than the last one, because Dominion, was it called? I really did not like that. I really did not like that. So anyway, that's for July. We've got to get through the rest of April first. So yes, Last of Us podcast, going to be a bunch of them. Film reviews, I've just explained all that. Gaming talk, we got that. Yellow Jackets is off for the moment, so no more podcasts for those.
and other stuff soon as well. So look out for all of that. But yeah, listen to more stuff, and word of mouth social media is how you can help us out. Of course, if someone mentions some of your podcasts on, please tell them about said podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcast review options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news. Speaking of film news and things like that. If you'd like to know what's going on with that, because there is the, as we call it, TV bloodbath at the moment. New Geek Town Radio from today, so you can go from here over to there and get your newest TV and film news. And yeah, check out geektown.co.uk through the week and Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays for all of that. And you can also find us on YouTube, Entertainment Talk Plays. If you missed my No Return Last of Us stream, that's totally spoiler free. You can check that out to see how I got on with my own survival skills in the roguelike mode, as they call it. So you can check that out as well. All right, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.